Hello and welcome to episode 26 of Chicago Business Podcast, where we introduce leading executives in the area and learn how innovation is impacting their organizations. I am your host, Drew Sekula, and today we welcome Brian Jenkins, founder and president of Entrenuity and Moxie, where Brian is making a strong economic contribution to the Chicago community by providing startup founders, entrepreneurs, and nonprofit leaders with the fundamentals of development, sustainability, and access to capital, primarily focused on underserved populations. Hello, Brian. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, nice to have you on, and great to have you here this afternoon. Glad that we were able to break away from some of the snow and cold and take a quick break for what will turn out to be a great podcast, I'm sure.
Very good. So, looking forward to it.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. So before we get into it, I'd like to break the ice with the beverage of the day. I know that you have a selection there, so why don't you tell us what you chose and why you chose it?
Yeah, today I'm drinking an air press, straight coffee, and no cream, no sugar, just straight black because I love the flavor of it. I chose it today because I was intending on having a vanilla latte, but we had to shut the shop down because of the snow. So this is something that we can do in the office. It's pretty easy to do. So
nice. That's funny. I am actually matching you as well with the straight black coffee, even.
Yes, because absolutely.
We had coordinated the latte, but I have a quick story to tell.
Okay.
As well, the vanilla latte is my wife's go-to drink when we're on vacations. We don't really make them at home, but I certainly have bought more than my fair share of them. But to me, I'm not a cream drinker. Mm. So you're the first person. We're on episode 26. You're the first person to stump me with a drink that I simply couldn't match because I don't drink cream.
Got it.
There's all sorts of different my wife likes to poke holes in my logic there, because you know, ice cream I'll make an exception for. So there's definitely some fine lines to be drawn there, but cream in my coffee is one thing I don't do, and lattes either. So but anyway,
that's good.
Let's talk about your coffee endeavors. That's a good segue. So
sure.
You just opened a coffee bar there associated with your, well, we'll talk about Moxie here in, maybe you could start there and then we can move into the coffee shop.
Sure. So Moxie is our enterprise level co-working space here in the South Loop at 1449 South Michigan. And it's designed for essentially for, you know, founders, startups, existing business owners to be able to have their own private office. They can work in our co-working space. There's three conference rooms. We have enterprise level technology, and they can essentially function, work from our office to, grow and launch their business. We have phone booths, everything's, COVID cleaned on a regular basis, and it's a great space to be in. Fun, exciting. We just launched about 2 weeks ago on the Moxie side. And we have, memberships, subscriptions, daily rates, all those kinds of things. But the goal is really to provide a place for entrepreneurs and founders to flourish with the tools and the technology that they need to be able to grow their business.
That's great. I think I saw that the city of Chicago had actually recognized you guys some too as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're getting more and more recognition because we are one of the first enterprise level Black owned and Black operated, co-working spaces on the, in the South Loop. And we've worked very closely with the city of Chicago, several of the city officials, including Alderman Pat Dowell, And also Mayor Lightfoot. You know, everyone's been waiting for us to get this thing going. So it's taken about 2 years of an entrepreneurial journey to get to this point, but we're here and we're ready to get going.
That's great. There's some historical significance to the building that you guys moved into as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The building is owned, the building, we own it now, but we purchased it. But it was a former home of VJ Records. VJ was the second Black independent label that came out in the 50s. And we are in their home. So they were an entrepreneurial company. It was James and Vivian Carter. And so the photo behind me that you can see is one of the pictures that we received from their son, Tolley Carter, of the original, one of the few pictures of the original owners in one location. So we mounted that here in Overflow. I'm actually in the coffee, you know, in the coffee shop right now. And, but we also have several photos, album covers on our, what we call our Instagram wall, where people come in and they can learn about the history of VJs or VJ, I should say. And we're going to continue their entrepreneurial legacy in trying to grow, you know, underrepresented founders.
That's great. That's great. I saw that they had something to do with bringing the Beatles over as well back in the day. Is that right?
Absolutely. They were the first label to actually bring the Beatles over. I mean, very, very few people knew that. I mean, I didn't know that until I started learning more about VJ myself. But they were the first group to, or the first label, I should say, to sign and bring them over when they were, you know, barely known, you know, early, you know, back in the 50s, or I should say late 50s, early 60s.
Nice. Yep. Very cool. Well, I know that you guys do a lot of work with the co-working spaces in terms of making it a forum for entrepreneurs to come in and network with other people and have space to do their work. But there's a lot of other services that I think that you offer through I want to say Edgenuity. That's that's the platform that my son uses for school. It's it's a similar name, but
a little bit different. Yeah, we offer programming services. So we have, for example, we have an ongoing class right now called Plan to Launch. It's a 6-week class. And we take, you know, people who have ideas but don't have a strategy, and we help form their idea to help them determine, you know, if there's a real business opportunity there. So some people have business skills or I should say exposure to business principles and things. Many don't. And so we walk them through one of our curriculum resources called Starting Up Now that helps them figure out if they have a business idea or if they have an idea that might remain as a hobby. But we take them through, how do you create an executive summary? How do you create a forecast for your sales to the end point where they actually create a business plan using our Starting Up Now platform.
That's great.
Thank you.
It's important work that you guys are doing. You also get involved in trying to match them up with access to capital as well once they kind of get their business plan in order. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have our tagline for Moxie, one of our taglines, I should say, is coaching, connecting, and capitalizing. The coaching is the training side, like the Plan to Launch class. The connecting is being able to connect them to to investors. Some of them are donors as well, but they own businesses and they're looking for opportunities. And then the capital is being able to connect them to a real capital opportunity. So a few weeks ago, we had what we call our capital matchmaker event, where we identified three founders. The three founders presented virtually, and we made some capital connections for those who they have been in each of them. The requirement was that they had to be in operation for at least 2 years. Have some experience in running and operating their business and be able to provide their financials. And they had an opportunity to pitch for 5 minutes. And we were able to make two capital connections from that event. And then it's kind of like dating. You know, we set the table, but it's up for them, you know, it's up to those two to kind of follow up and create that connection. But we see ourselves as a catalyzing organization in order to make those connections for underrepresented founders through those kind of events.
That's great. Do you have any other success stories? I know it's early days with Moxie, but do you have any other success stories that to share with us?
Yeah. I mean, interestingly enough, I started Entrenuity is the brand, so to speak. Moxie is, you know, our co-working space. But Entrenuity has been around for about 23 years. And I launched Entrenuity in 99. Most of my work up until recently, and I say recently in the last 7 or 8 years, have primarily been with youth on the south and west sides of Chicago. And so we, one of our most famous stories is a group of students, two students that we work with from Roseland Christian School, from the Roseland community years ago. And these two students launched a vending machine business that ended up generating about $35,000 annually while they were in seventh and eighth grade. They both went on to, went on to college. He went to Morehouse College. But he got his first taste of entrepreneurship in our class and became a business major. And now he's in finance. He's done several different, he has several different opportunities. Goldman Sachs was one of them, but we like to take credit and say, hey, we turned him on to what is financing all about. So, but we've been able to have, you know, that kind of an impact on students, both, you know, in the classroom, business camp programs, after school programs, and I've been able to been blessed with the opportunity to teach internationally as well. So it's been a great career, a unplanned career, as many entrepreneurs are, but it's been great over the last 20 plus years.
That's great. The school programs that you've been doing, then, have those been through CPS, or it sounded like that was a private school that you'd done? I have some history with Big Shoulders Fund as well, where I teach a stock market program through them. And so I'm just interested in hearing a little bit more about your youth advocacy programs.
Yeah, most of my work, ironically, has been done with Chicago Public Schools. So, we work with private schools, parochial schools, you name it. Wherever their kids are, that's where we go. And so, and interestingly enough, you know, with the arts, over the stock, that's one of the elements that we teach, you know, in our class to really show, you know, the whole idea of what an asset is, you know, and how it can, you know, how you can make money over time. Many of the students that we work with are not always familiar with what a stock even is, you know, let alone a mutual fund or other financial tools as well. So we try to incorporate, you know, what those tools are, what those resources are. We like to demystify business, put it in terms that a plain person, you know, a regular person can understand, but then give them tools and resources that they can actually leverage and use on their own for the rest of their life.
Yeah, there's still so much opportunity, I think, to teach kids more about that personal financial responsibility and just, you know, they are sponges for learning, and they can Absolutely. Really pick up on a lot of that stuff early, and it can help a lot to learn about even, you know, credit card debt and
absolutely and
all of those types of things can just prove to be invaluable. So I really think that there's a, you know, it, although that, you know, there are some pockets of programs that are out there, I really wish more could be done. I'm actually running for school board here locally out where I live in the western suburbs, and that's one of the things that I kind of want to bring is some more personal financial literacy to our district here. So
very good. Right. In fact, just to piggyback on that, we find that once students learn some of the principles about running a business, it's a direct tie-in to what they do with their personal finances as well. So we see that happen often.
Right. Yeah, certainly does. Mm-hmm. So maybe let's take a step back and maybe you can take us through your origin story a little bit and tell us about where you came from. And
Yeah, I'm an entrepreneur, not by choice. You know, it was one of those things where I went to undergrad at the University of Iowa and came out with degrees in English and religion. Didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. Knew I wanted to serve in my community.
Were you from Chicago originally or no?
I'm from Waukegan. I grew up in Waukegan.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yep, Waukegan, North Chicago area. And when I went to graduated from Iowa, I was really trying to figure things out. I knew I wanted to serve. My faith is very important to me. So I went to grad school at Wheaton College out in Wheaton, Illinois, and came out with a degree in theology. Thought I was going to be a professor at a university and teach, in the area of theology. I ran into an entrepreneurship program on the west side of Chicago in the pursuit of my now wife. They needed somebody to teach a program around entrepreneurship with kids. And to be honest, it was not that I was interested in entrepreneurship. I really just wanted to spend more time with her. So I volunteered. And 26 years, we've been married for 26 years. So we only taught one entrepreneurship program together. That was it. And I have been in the field of entrepreneurship education ever since then, because I really saw the impact that it made on the students and their families. But I also saw the impact that it could really make on communities as well. So my story, my startup was really a call to service, not necessarily a call to owning and operating businesses. But since then, I've really appreciated what business opportunity, can do, for a community. My family background, we've always owned businesses and operated businesses, for years. But that's, my non-traditional story of how I got launched, And so it's really like many people, many, many owners you'll find is that you want to have, you create a product or service to serve an existing need, or you create a product or service to solve something that hasn't been invented yet. And so entrepreneurship for me has been a great resource to work with those I may have never touched and worked with before with a theology degree. So, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, that's good. So you have your businesses set up generally as nonprofits though, or you have different aspects to it. Maybe you can walk us through that.
Sure. Yeah. So Entrenuity is a nonprofit, but we own and operate for-profit businesses, and one of them here is Overflow. We have this coffee bar our official launch date will be this Friday, February 19th. And we're going to be launching here at 1449 South State. We also own another coffee shop called Common Cup in Rogers Park as well. So these are for-profit businesses that we own as a nonprofit, and that's because we do Entrenuity does, we do things a little differently than the traditional nonprofit. When I launched Entrenuity, I didn't have the strong connections to donors and foundations and things. What I could do was I was always able to go out there and teach. And so I would go to a school and say, hey, if you can, if let's say the program was going to cost 10 grand, if you could come up with 3 grand, I would find a donor who could come up with 7,000, 7 grand. And that way there was the school was basically putting some skin in the game, which every, donor loves to see. And then at the same time, the donor was, obviously, contributing to the, to the education or the entrepreneurship education for those students. And so that model of creating a fee-based service model was my model of how I got Entrenuity off the ground. And at one point, it's shifted now, 70% of our revenue came from earned income, basically, for me teaching, using our tools and our resources and educational programs to teach, and only about 30% came through donations. And that model I wrote another book recently called No More Nonprofits, and that's KNOW, Moving from Dependency to Sustainability. And in one of those chapters, I talk about how the less dependent we were on donors and the more innovation we showed, we were able to raise more capital and have a greater impact with those that we wanted to serve. So One of the things I really try to push now in the nonprofit industry and the culture is that we need to be innovative about our, not only our tools and our resources, but also about our sustainability models as well. So Overflow is one model, you know, of a way that we generate revenue, we provide jobs, but Entrenuity, you know, as a whole, we own Overflow Coffee.
Are you still in line with those percentages, or are donors, I would think with purchasing the space, the donor contributions have to be significantly more to be able to get into your own space now. Is that right?
Absolutely. So when we bought the building, we were able to go to a particular donor. The opportunity came, let them know what the, you know, we, you know, it's almost like a business pitch, you know, it's a we were in need of a space. Here's a, you know, the location here on the South Loop. It's a great asset and a great location with, you know, high levels of appreciation. And the business case was that it allowed us to be able to, you know, move Overflow, have our co-work space, and actually appreciate and value. So it was a pretty much a done deal. And we went through a lot of trial and error to get the space up and running. But that, you know, we were able to raise a significant amount of dollars for that. But we were able to, you know, it allows us to own and operate, you know, Overflow, which is been very cash positive over the last couple of years, but even more so in the space here, as well as Common Cup up north. And then we have the co-working space as well. So we're able to drive or bring in rents and uses, you know, and basically people paying rent for events, conferences and workshops and all that. But we also have the private offices that people rent and use as well. So we believe that, you know, as a nonprofit, you need to be innovative, and you also need to be able to create sustainable revenue on an ongoing basis, especially in the time that we're in right now.
Right. Is there anything more you can share about some of your major donors and kind of who they are, or where you pull that from?
Yeah. One of our major donors is the Soderquist Family Foundation, a great foundation here. I've known Mark and Jennifer Soderquist for the last 25 years. They basically have been tracking with me ever since I got almost at the very beginning of Entrenuity. They've seen the growth. He's been a great friend, colleague, business partner over the last several years. And they really believe in the mission and vision of Entrenuity as a whole. He and his wife have a unique testimony and story in that, you know, they're, you know, a white couple that moved into the west side of Chicago in the North Lawndale community and wanted to make a difference. And they partnered with a church called West Lawn Gospel Chapel. And Mark eventually he became one of the co-pastors there with Pastor Derek Rollerson. And he and his wife are there and raised his family, you know, on the west side of Chicago for the last 30 years. And so Mark definitely understands the struggle that many families face, you know, coming from the west side of Chicago, having, you know, still lives there. And it's been a great colleague and partner in this, in the journey and the growth of Entrenuity.
Nice. Yeah, that's great. You got to have good supporters, and having longtime donors like that, I'm sure makes all the difference.
It's everything. And that's why I really stress to people how important the relationships are long-term. In fact, a side story is that my son is a senior engineering student at Valparaiso. And I'm telling him, you know, his name is Braxton. And I say, Brax, you know, you have to really understand how important it is that the relationships that you're making in college, not only with your friends and peers, but also with your professors, may last a lifetime. You know, you just never know how important relationships are. And that's how business is built, you know, it's through relationships. And so it's something that we really need to stress, particularly to the millennial generation as well. The millennials run a lot of the coffee shop for us, but we really try to, you know, have them understand how important not only just their personal relationships are, but their business relationships, and you never know where it can lead.
You talked about a lot of connections to the west side of Chicago. I'm a little familiar with the area, having grown up in Oak Park, and
oh, yeah.
just think you live in Austin, actually. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. No Oak Park. Well,
yeah, I lived right at Humphrey and Van Buren. So just a block west of there. So
yep, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, my son grew up in the Oak Park baseball program ever since kindergarten through eighth grade. Absolutely.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So, COVID-19, can't have a discussion these days without talking about kind of the impact of the coronavirus and how it's impacted your organization.
Yeah, it impacted us in the sense that when we first got the notification that we were located in the Daystar building two blocks over on State Street, and that's where we had overflow, that's where we had our offices at. And when we were told that the school was going to we were renting there as many other renters were, we were told that we had to relocate because they were going to expand and use their space. And so, it was weird because we had just paid off the coffee shop, you know, literally maybe 5 or 6 days before that. And then we find out we got to move, you know, which I was completely unprepared for. You know, it's one of those moments I had. Let's say I had to go home and take one day off, put it like that. Mm-hmm. And so when I came back, you know, my able-bodied admin, Mrs. Randy Cragen, immediately got on it. And we ended up, she started looking for a building, you know, where we're at right now. And we wanted to create a co-work space, but we did not have an idea that due to COVID, how important the private offices would become. So we had this plan almost 2 years ago, but because of COVID, it's made our private offices and clean spaces and phone booths and those kinds of things that more attractive, especially, as many, many corporations are creating what we're calling now office optional. They'll pay their employees, their staff a stipend, and their staff can either work from home or they can, you know, work from a private office environment. And so COVID, without us knowing, has created an opportunity for us by having a enterprise level space that's, you know, COVID, you know, that we, you know, we clean and, you know, on a regular basis. But 2 years ago, I would have never known that that would become an opportunity through COVID. And so in 2020 was a tough year for all of us, but we really saw as we continued to develop the space and, you know, and connect, you know, our Moxie director, her name is Angela Madaha. And the more and more Angela connected with other spaces, we saw how important it was to have a, co-working spaces and how much more important they were going to become for workers.
Nice. Maybe if you want to talk a little bit more about the books that you authored, I want to give you a chance to.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, my first book was Starting Up Now, 24 Steps to Launch Your Own Business. I wrote that, I think it was in 2010, 2011, and the goal of Starting Up Now, it's less than 100 pages. You can find it on Amazon, but the goal was to put it in 99 pages, a story, a guide to help the person who has no idea what an executive summary is, no idea what a balance sheet is, no idea what cash flow may be, and to put it in a very short, guidebook, that every time they completed a chapter, it could be a step towards completing their business plan. And so the reason I wrote, I had it in the idea that I wanted to, you know, write something for someone like my dad, who's, you know, incredibly intelligent, but never had any formal education as far as business is concerned. And so if he wanted to pick it up at a Walmart or Amazon or whatever, he could pick it up and find out, you know, hey, you know, I need to figure out what my big idea is, and he could do it and create a business plan without trying to not make the business plan process so complicated. You know, this is not for your MBA level. This is for someone who's just getting started, literally the title, Starting Up Now. And so then what we did, we took the book and we put it basically in a e-learning format. And so someone can take the book now, and we use this at several different colleges and universities where people can get credit for it, and they can work through the book online and create their own business plan through their iPhone, their iPad, or on our platform called Skills Center. And so we're on our going into our fourth iteration of Skills Center based on Starting Up Now. But essentially what a person does is it's a one location for them to do their research. So for example, we're going to say, hey, you got to figure out your research around your vision statement. You know, they log in, we have different tools and resources for them to, you know, to check out, what a vision statement is all about. But then there's these videos that we call Sun Talks, or they call Starting Up Now Talks, so they can get a guided tour of business leaders and entrepreneurs who are talking about that particular topic. And so it's a one-stop shop where they can, you know, basically, you know, learn and have a pathway to create a business plan, and they can do it, in a traditional, format, but step by step, or they can do it, modularly as they go about it as well.
Cool. Shifting to kind of current initiatives that you're working on, what are kind of the most important things that you're focused on?
If I could spend the next 20 years, it would be focused on capitalizing on Black, Latinx, and women-owned businesses. So we're launching, quietly launching what we're calling Moxie Venture Partners. And Moxie Venture Partners is basically a subsidiary of Entrenuity, but it's essentially where we're working with the business community and different venture capital groups that are interested in investing in Black, Latinx, and women entrepreneurs, but they're trying to find them, you know? And so what we want to do is kind of serve as an intermediary to say, hey, we have a strong connection to that community. And we want to have, so our event that we had a couple of weeks ago, like the Capital Matchmaker event, was kind of like a culmination of us sourcing we started off with about 50 entrepreneurs, and we narrowed that list down to 3. And so as we create these capital connections, we want to be able to have this venture partner network where it's a subscription base, where these where VCs and individuals essentially pay a fee to Entrenuity as a nonprofit, so that we can actually spend the time to source who these entrepreneurs are and present them for potential funding, and then they would be able to follow up with the individuals themselves. So we're calling that Moxie Venture Partners, or MVP. And my colleague and friend, a staffer who works with us, his name is Adam Phillips, and Adam is heading up. He's the managing director for Moxie Venture Partners. So we're hoping to grow that, but it's one of the ways and one of the tools that we're seeking to leverage to create capital opportunities. And one of the things I learned years ago at a workshop is that I was at a Microsoft workshop, and the facilitator said, good money follows great ideas. And so the more ideas that we can find and leverage and create opportunities for, the money is there. The money is all over. The issue of money is not always the issue in the marketplace. The issue is, how do we partner that money, connect that capital, and help that founder, get her business off the ground.
Yep, that's great. Well, with the help of leaders like you, makes it a lot, that can be much more within reach, because I think it's, as you've really designed your programs, a lot of people just don't know where to start, right?
Absolutely. That's one of our strengths is, like me, I look at it like, hey, I had a degree from English and religion and theology, but I think if you find the person who has a drive, the motivation, what we say is to take their idea, move from an idea, turn their idea into an invoice, to see if that idea really has some legs, put some strategy around it, and help them, essentially empower them is how I see it. We don't do the work for them. We tell them up front, we're a guy. You do the research, you do the work, you follow our tools and you leverage our resources. Those are there to assist you to get this idea off the ground, so that when you do launch it, it's yours. And so we like to see ourselves as kind of like a catalyst to unleashing their capacity.
Do you take any type of equity stake in any of the businesses that go through the program?
We could. That's something that we have not done to date. But it's something that we're certainly considering, you know, with the launch of MVP, and we're looking at new ways to go about doing that. We've considered early, before we even launched MVP, we thought about launching our own fund, you know, and what that would be like. I found out that we don't know a lot about running a fund, so we stick in our lane. But one of the things that we, you know, ultimately what we would like to do is to create some sort of investment vehicle, maybe through a crowdfunding platform, to be able to take a stake in some of the companies that we've worked with. And some of the companies have actually done really well, you know. So we do a lot of one-on-one coaching and consulting, and some have really blown up, you know, and it's not always because of us. It's kind of like we can catch them on the, you know, on the early end of the funnel or the end of the funnel, but we've seen some come through that have done quite well.
Maybe you could share some top influencers that, you know, all of this is very impressive that you've done, but it hasn't been, I'm sure, without guidance. So who have been some of your top influencers as you've gone about your journey?
Sure. Again, Mark Soderquist, my friend, you know, from the Soderquist Family Foundation, mm-hmm. has been a strong friend. My CEO friend is a guy named Stephen Frazier from Barrington Capital. He's a turnaround CEO. He's very direct, put it like that. He always say he doesn't tell me what I want to hear. He tells me what I need to hear, you know. So he's one of those guys that I could always look to for advice. He's always available, you know. He's a great friend. Another person who's recently come online with us is a guy by the name of Greg Lernahan. Greg is a founder, one of the co-founders, I should say, of Convergent, a securities company. Greg launched that 20 plus years ago, and he's since exited, but he's become a friend and a investor and a donor for investor in some of our for-profit ventures, but also a donor through the MIGMIR fund, which he launched as well. So I would say between Stephen, you know, Greg, and then also to my, you know, I would also say, and I would get in trouble if I don't say, my wife of 26 years has been with me from the very beginning, you know, and anybody who's launched something knows how important it is to have, you know, your wife, you know, or your spouse or partner on board, but she has been with me from the very beginning and supported me when this was just an idea, when we had no money to do anything. We had to decide, you know, paying rent or do we pay the bills, you know, those kinds of things. But she has been an excellent support for me. We have three children that we're blessed with, Bria, Braxton, and our youngest is Brooke. And then, of course, my parents, Larry and Madeline Jenkins, who are still in Waukegan, they have supported us financially every year. And so it's this is not something that I have done on my own. I am blessed to be in this position and want to be a blessing to others.
That's great. Well, really are making a difference. It's great to hear your story. Thank you for your time today. And let's stay in touch.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.